Hi everybody, and welcome to the Elevate podcast. This week, Miranda and Lee are joined by our special guest, Victoria Hamilton. Today we'll be discussing customer experience in a post-COVID-19 reality. This episode will be available in two parts, so look out for the second instalment coming soon. I'll hand over now to Miranda to do broader introductions, and we hope you enjoy the debate as much as we will.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome, Victoria and Lee, obviously. So, Victoria, you and I have been talking for a while, so really appreciate you agreeing to join us today. So in terms of introducing myself, I'm Miranda Kane, and I'm Managing Director for Elevate, and we're a new consulting business, and our focus very much around CX and sales. And you and I have had many an hour debating the world of CX over the last few weeks.
I sure have.
Victoria, and it felt like absolutely we should get together and discuss this. So so thank you again, and over to you.
Thanks for the introduction, Miranda, and thanks for the opportunity to come and join you both to discuss all things customer and people experience related. I've worked in the customer and people experience space for over 20 years now for market leading brands, including John Lewis, HSBC and O2. And I think these last few months have really represented a period of such unparalleled change and volatility. I think it's really interesting to see how different organisations have responded to both the changing customer needs and the changing needs of their employees. Like yourselves, I too have taken this opportunity to set up a new business. So I have set up Orange Falcon Consulting, really looking to export all that knowledge and experience, having seen the good, the bad and the ugly of customer and people experience programmes over the years, and really bring that to life to help organisations embrace this new chapter in this next period that we're all facing into.
Yes. Great, thanks Victoria. We worked some big brands there, so we look forward to hearing some of your stories in a minute. So finally, I'm Lee Jones, I'm Sales Director for Elevate Performance. So working with Miranda, we've worked together for a number of years now in the performance improvement space. And you know, I've got about 20 years experience working with people and the development of people. And what I'm really passionate about is that when you do develop your people and you focus on them, that you can get commercial results. So, you know, in the world of learning and training, I think there's not enough accountability, a focus on the actual results. But actually, I think a lot of the time that if you look at it and you measure it and you get it right, then it can change an organization's commercial outcome. So I'm kind of quite passionate that the focus on those individuals gets you that result. So that's myself.
So thanks everyone for those introductions. I think we're going to have a great debate today. So just to kick that off, I'm going to move on to my first question. So what, in your mind, makes customers loyal to a brand or business?
So this is a really interesting one for me, because I think that this has changed significantly in light of recent events. So I think that CX now is much broader than it ever was. So I don't think it's simply, the speed with which an issue is resolved or how quickly you can get to talk to an individual. It's moved for me to the experience that I have as a customer, and the fact that I share that lens with a broad range of people. And I was having a conversation with a friend I've had for a long time, who was saying that their son actually has a view around an organization because his mother works for that organization and has had a very challenging experience over the last few months, as have many people. And that actually has informed a lens that a buyer of the future now has around an organization. So for me, it's not just as a current consumer or customer of an organization, it's much broader. And so I think that organizations have to think about, never have we spent more time with our families, and never have our families been more connected, you know, children, parents, siblings, been more connected to the experience that we're having. But it's not just at the effect of an organisation whose services we buy, it's also at the effect of an organisation for whom we work. And that will inform buying decisions that are made by people moving forward. Not just buying decisions, but also it links inextricably for me to choices people will make around aspirational organisations to work for. So I think that businesses have to think far more broadly around the experience that people have of their organisation, both actually as a consumer, but also as an employee. And that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, no, good points. Well made, Miranda. Thank you for sharing those. So just with that in mind, what would you advise organisations to focus on right now in terms of their customer experience, particularly given the current landscape?
I'll come in there. I think given the current landscape, which cannot be underemphasised in terms of how much of a wholesale shift and impact that's had on all walks of life, I think the important thing is to not just assume that your customer experience and customer expectation post-COVID remains as it was pre-COVID. I think people, be they customers, be employees, we've all had some fundamental impacts on our daily lives in terms of worries about health, worries about financial security, job security, and that then has a bearing on your expectations and requirements of a brand and the products and services that they provide. So I think that would be my rule number one, to fundamentally relearn and re-listen to your customers in terms of what their needs, expectations and wants are of the products and services that you provide. And I think also look at one of the big trends we've seen in recent months has been the rapid uplift in the pace of digital adoption and new tools and technologies that customers are becoming increasingly comfortable using. So I think recognising the role that digital acceleration plays in your business, but actually what capacity does that free up in your teams for some of the more complex transactions and queries and interactions your customers might have? And I think what we're hearing particularly now is the increased importance of empathy, of listening, of rapport building, just really recognising some of the difficult situations customers have been through. So for the remaining interactions that come through your more traditional human-to-human route, how are you actually creating a workforce that's set up to really embrace that requirement for empathy and listening with your customers? And I think to Miranda's point, customers are looking at organisations through a much wider lens now. It's not just in the here and now of the product and service that I might purchase from you. It's actually looking at that entire value chain, that entire ecosystem, in terms of how businesses supported their employees, but actually what's the wider role of partnership working and supplier management that businesses are engaging with. I know we've seen some examples in the press of companies who've maybe not come out as shining examples of how to treat both their employees and their customers in recent months. And I think customers are much more attuned to that. They've got access to information sources across so many channels, so they can make much more informed decisions, not just about the immediacy of their interaction with a company, but actually what its brand stands for, and are their values as a brand aligned to customers' own individual values and preferences. So I think the landscape is much broader than I think it ever has been before, but that creates some real opportunities for organisations to really home in and focus on that.
Yeah, I agree, Victoria. I like your first point about listening to your customers. So I think, you know, at a time where companies are always trying to either reinvent themselves or potentially commercially survive or trying to grow as a business, I think people forget that their employees are sometimes the best route to understanding what customer demand is. So any business or any market can turn off at any point, irrespective of the economy or the market situation. But I think there are organizations that think they listen to their customers, or they listen to their people, and do they truly do that? Because you can't just run a survey to your employees and think that the verbatims are going to give you the answer. I think there's organizations like Google, for example. They have innovation days. In those innovation days, once a month, they will allow their employees to work on any project they like, irrespective of their work stack and what they're currently working on. And they say that their biggest customer solutions come out of those innovation days. Mm-hmm. So what that basically says is, let your employees work on what they want and they'll solve your customer problems for you. So the reason for that is they say their employees are the best connected people to your customers. Yeah. So, you know, why try to get the answers through your customers through, you know, just surveys or just focus groups when you might have 20,000 people that could give you those answers. And I think just the other thing is how you build on the ideas your employees give you. So do you get them involved in forums and continual improvement workshops? Do you give every initiative the space it deserves to see if you can test every angle on it? Or do you just go, no, that will never work and shut it down? And I think it's the ability to involve your people in the continued development of those ideas that will lead you to ones that work.
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, if you look at contact centres, the millions of interactions that customer service frontline agents are exposed to with customers. But how often do we truly tap into that voice of the employee to translate that employee experience into the customer experience and then really amplify that customer experience across the wider business? And I think that's something that's been really quite exciting to watch, that transformation and that change in recent months, when retail shops, bank branches, etc., have had to furlough their staff and have had to shut other frontline teams. Your contact centre has really become a key conduit into understanding that customer experience, which in turn is affecting increased collaboration across teams as wider business functions really look to listen to that voice of the employee sharing what the customer experience has been. And I think any opportunities to A, tap into your frontline teams, but B, create an environment where their voice and their playback and feedback can really be amplified and shared, I think, you know, you're really onto some exciting opportunities then to work in a much more dynamic and collaborative way across your teams.
Yeah, agree. I mean, agree entirely. And I was listening to something at the weekend. Actually, it was Shep Hyken and a couple of other panelists, and they were sort of drawing the distinction between the voice of the customer and the actions of the customer. Mm-hmm. And all too many organisations sort of, you know, rely on getting a half decent NPS score or CSAT score. But that doesn't guarantee that translates into that customer in a year's time. It could be a year's time, the next opportunity for them to be making a comparable buying decision, doesn't mean that sort of initial feedback translates into action. And only with greater proximity and exploring things outside of the standard sort of questions on an NPS survey, can you really get clear around the likely intent of that customer going forward? And to your point, that comes through the employee who's having the conversations that really point to how that customer feels. And I don't think that gets over the fact that some people just will do everything in their power to kind of avoid contention. And so you could give you a decent NPS score, even though that's not necessarily how they feel. So I think you're right. Use it, you know, tapping into the employees who have that proximity is the only way to ensure you're getting that absolute clarity in terms of the experience your customers are having.
I think I was just going to say also, with this proliferation and acceleration in terms of adoption of digital tools, which has partly been driven by necessity because, you know, capacity has needed to be created in operational teams, but customers are much more comfortable interacting and hopping across different channels now. But it's really important that you're not just gathering that insight and understanding of the customer journey when they're speaking to a physical person. How are you actually able to understand, well, this part of my customer experience and customer journey is now largely satisfied by a digital channel, but how am I extracting insight about what that feels like for the customer and how we're joining up all that insight across our different customer journeys to truly understand the moments of truth?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I know obviously we've spoken a number of times now, Victoria, and certainly one of my fears is they say that necessity is the mother of invention. So obviously the last few months have necessitated more of a move to virtual approaches. So whether that's ways of working, whether that's, you know, customer service, it doesn't matter what it is, we've all had to do more of that. I still think there's a huge risk that has been accelerated through necessity, but means that for a lot of organisations, these sort of new approaches have been deployed without necessarily the sort of stress testing that they should have had. And so actually there's a risk now that they say, well, we're doing it this way now, we'll just stick with that, without saying, well, we did that because at the time it was better than the alternatives, which was to not be available to our customers. Now we're sort of navigating into whatever, I hate the phrase, but the new normal will look like. Let's invest time and energy in refining and making sure that we haven't just gone full bore to a sort of new world without that diligence. And with, I think that's a distinct risk right now for a number of organisations.
Yeah, I was chatting to my father yesterday. He's a financial advisor and he has to speak to brokers and lenders all the time. And he's talking of an hour, hour and a half to get through to these organisations because then when he gets through, finding that the people on the other side haven't signposted the other available options to them because they haven't integrated their people in the change. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I've been watching a digital transformation with many organizations over the last few years. And it's almost like they do it because without bringing their people on the journey, because they almost feel like it's the replacement to them.
Yeah.
So they're almost embarrassed to, this is going to replace you at some point, as opposed to realizing there's always a role for people to mediate and triage sometimes that technology in their digital channels. So bring them on the journey. And I mean, communication's key in any organization, but if you're not showing your people what digital channels are available, digital integrations are available, then you even worsen the experience.
I think that's so true what you say there. And I think possibly if you look at organizations where there is this acceleration of automation, naturally, employees, if they've not had clear and transparent communications, will potentially start to feel a little bit protective about their roles, because potentially they're starting to feel marginalized, that the robots are taking over and there's no room for my role as a human being anymore, which, you know, I really, really don't think is the case. But you can absolutely understand why, in the absence of clear communication, outlining that roadmap, outlining the purpose and the opportunities, and crucially, I think, outlining what extra opportunities can be created by releasing some of that human operational capacity to engage in some of the more complex, more lengthy interactions, to just really be there for customers and develop that rapport. You can see how some of that nervousness could be created within a team. And yeah, totally agree. Communicate, communicate, communicate some more, I think is always the mantra when you're looking at embracing and engaging full-scale transformation like that.
Yeah, the impact of not involving your people in it, and you see it all the time, don't you? When you speak to somebody in a customer service role and they apologize for their technology being slow, or they say, oh yeah, well, that, you know, they haven't fixed that yet, or I don't know, that must be an upgrade. Because if they haven't been brought on the journey, then what they do is they make the technology look worse through their own empathy around your experience.
Yeah.
Or it's that kind of common enemy syndrome, you know, it's like they're always blaming someone else to protect their own credibility, and that could be co-workers, it could be other departments, and it can also be technology. So you're absolutely right, training and communications and involving people in the change is really important.
Interestingly, right now, I mean, I see so much blame, you know, everything. Well, everything's blamed on COVID.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, if you have a crappy experience, oh well, that's because of COVID, you know, and that's impacted, you know, the number of people we've got working, or, you know, it's impacted our revenue and therefore we've had to furlough people. So we have, you know, we have less capacity, and that will impact your, your customer experience. And it's kind of getting a bit old.
That excuse will run out.
Yeah, it will. And it will, because there are some amazing organizations that pivoted and have done a great job. And actually, some of this isn't about so much the experience for me. I think if some organizations just led with, listen, guys, really sorry, or just acknowledge that they know they're not doing what, you know, as good a, or providing as good a service as they should or did historically, that would go a long way. And that's, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's part of CX anyway, which is acknowledgement. And we're not seeing as much of that as I would expect, I guess. And it's just wheeled out constantly as a reason for everything that's kind of substandard. And I don't think, you know, if these things happen and they run for a month, then people will tolerate a lot for a month, right? But when you're now, we're into 6 months, and the fact is there are some absolute beacons of light doing a great job, customers now will be looking around and saying, well, actually, I don't have to accept this now. And I might take on the sort of inconvenience or the kind of ball ache of the change to now go to an organization that has just done a better job.
Yeah. I wonder, so when we get to financial results time and as we start to see results over the next 6 to 9 months, how many organizations will be blaming the situation?
Yeah.
And how many don't? And they've had a strong commitment. And it'd be interesting to see what their customer voice of the customer kind of schemes and initiatives look like. I wonder how much they, you know, if you look into it, talk to their employees and their customers and have used them to navigate themselves.
There's a
non-blame culture.
Yeah, there's a communication piece as well, isn't there? Because when organizations made a decision to, you know, half their workforce that work in a particular space, how much of that was even communicated? Mm. So some of it's just about realigning the expectations of your customer. So that applies now. So if you think about retail, high street retail, so stores, when the stores reopened, for most, they had to realign the expectation of the customer. So you turn up at the store, many then created sort of greeters. So when you arrived, they would talk you through the changes that had to be made in a store. And so whether that was your preference and whether you wanted to walk around the store in a particular fashion became secondary. Most people understood that that was a requirement to meet, you know, to keep everybody safe, both staff and customers. So it, the realigning bit, when it's done, most people are accepting of that. But when I know I've had countless experiences, so my car lease was up for renewal, and it took me 4 weeks to get a response from the leasing company. 4 weeks. And you're kind of going, actually, you have the systems and the intel to look and say, all of these customers are coming up for renewal. Why don't we proactively go to those people rather than, you know, that I have to give my car back. So, I think that, you know, or send a letter that says, actually, don't worry if it goes a bit past the date because it might take us a bit longer. Realign my expectations or be proactive. Mm. But you've got to do something. But I think that more of the onus has sat with the customer to kind of find out what's going on, test the new systems, but actually find out it's a new system only at the point that you make a phone call and you get a message that says, yeah, we're not taking calls on this number anymore. You need to email this email address and wait for a response. So I think, a lot of tricks have been missed, and there are still organizations 6 months in who just haven't even got tidy around what I see as almost hygiene factors.
I think you're right. I think there's some businesses that will dine out on the unparalleled times, whereas there's other businesses who I think have really shown it to be a critical inherent strength, their ability to operate with pace, operate with purpose, and quickly respond to the challenging and changing needs. I saw some really fascinating insight looking at customer expectations across a whole host of industry sectors. And obviously some industry sectors have been more impacted in recent months than others. So if you look at the retail and hospitality sector, the automotive industry, to your point, Miranda, has been more profoundly impacted than say the tech sector, which has been impacted, but probably positively in terms of increased demand from the customers. But across all those sectors, whilst there were slight nuances, it was really insightful to see how customer expectations have changed. So there's much more emphasis on integrity. So I think, you know, that was one of your opening comments, Miranda, and also effort. So how easy is it for me as a customer to do business with you? And I think that's always been an element that's reflected in customer experience and customer satisfaction scores. But I think it's really particularly pronounced now. And that explanation that we're living in unparalleled times is just not going to really wash with customers in the long term. They'll be looking to those brands that have shown their ability to be nimble, to be agile, to quickly respond and quickly adjust their ways of working. I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that pans out across different sectors, but with different organisations. And I think that mindset to the changing environment that we've all found ourselves in is absolutely critical, whether you view it as a hurdle or whether you view it as an opportunity to really embrace and move forward from.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that organisations need to take almost, it's the helicopter view that says customers are being bombarded with messages around furlough, cost reduction, you know, redundancies, all of those things, whilst having, you know, finding that it takes 10 times longer to get a response to something. So very simplistically, from a customer's view, when they hear that, and you know, yet another organization is going to be reducing their headcount, you know, by 5,000, all a customer says is, how can that be? Because I can't speak to someone when I need to, which suggests you haven't got enough people. So when it then feels like, and actually your answer right now is to reduce the number of people that can be in service, it just doesn't make any sense. Now I know that obviously from a business and a commercial perspective, it's much more complex than that. But what organizations have to understand is that most customers don't have the insight that the organization has around those sort of inner workings. And they just simplistically look and say, well, I can't get to speak to anybody when I need to, and you're taking more heads out. And that there's a disconnect. And that's where, when I talk about that inextricable link for me now between CX and essentially EX, that's where that comes from as well.
Yeah, this is where, so I've got a live example where I have just stayed loyal to my car insurance company last week because my renewal's up. Now I can get it a little bit cheaper, not loads cheaper. They've always been pretty competitive. But I've just spent 4 months phoning any service provider, whether it's my utilities, telco, HMRC, takes over an hour to get through. I phoned them, I got through within 4 minutes last week because I needed to talk to them about my policy and my renewal. And customer service was untouched. So you would never have known that we were in the same situation as, you know, when you phone, you spend an hour, you get the apology. Yeah. Now I've stayed loyal to them. One, they're a great provider, but that was the clincher for me. I don't want to be phoning loads of people or be having a provider that's made an excuse they can't man the phones. So I've just stayed loyal. And the problem is, a lot of companies don't know how to measure loyalty. So NPS is, or ease is a way that you can measure loyalty, but it's very soft. It's not hard and fast. So I think, you know, a lot of organizations still don't take loyalty seriously, and measuring loyalty and thinking about things that they do that drives loyalty. Mm-hmm. It will just be about, what's my immediate balance sheet need? I need to reduce my cost, rather than seeing that investment in their customer and their people drives longer term success, because it takes their cost of sale down, their acquisition sale down, because retaining customers is easier than getting customers.
Well, it's interesting. I waded into a bit of a debate on LinkedIn this morning, and a guy had posted, his second connection, but he posted that he'd received his renewal for his house insurance, and the renewal cost was 30% up on last year's premium. And, you know, he phoned up, had to wait some time, took him 7 minutes to get through security. And then when he positioned the issue, he was then put on hold for 2 minutes. The agent then came back and said, yes, they would reduce the renewal premium. And so I think it was going to end up being less than 1% above what he paid last year. So one, And actually, he was furious because he was saying, well, actually, if you could give me the renewal at that price, one, why are you trying to get it, you know, me to renew at 30% above? But it was also saying, but you're driving traffic to a space where you're saying we're struggling from a capacity perspective. Clearly, it took him a while to get through, and then it takes a while to get. So to your point, the cost to serve him has gone up, and now they're charging him less than 1% more than last year. In real terms, they're making less money because of the cost of retaining him.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of that. And at one, I mean, I remember years ago, your loyalty as a customer gave you significant advantages. Mm. So back in showing my age now, if you banked with an organization for many years, your decisions around, so this was before, you know, the sort of rigor there is around credit scores and things like that, but if you banked with someone for a long, you know, for an organization for a long time, you got preferential treatment as you know, a loyal customer. And it also feels like that slipped. And you know, somebody else had posted and said, oh, well, that's interesting. They named the organization, which I won't, said, oh, well, I just went on and I got, as a new customer, I got a quote that was 20% less than I was paying previously. So you say, so you're incentivizing to bring in new, but you're not investing the same time to make sure that your existing customers are getting the best possible deal.
I find it really insane because it's been understood for so long that it costs less to keep an existing customer than it does to attract a new customer. But you do hear so many examples. I know I was speaking to my mum just about one recently who was looking at a particular entertainment provider, and it's I guess a bit of a widely known secret that if you phone and say I want to cancel, you automatically get a reduction in your monthly subscription fee. And you know that it just shouldn't be like that. It's just own goals that the businesses are scoring, putting effort into the customer's field, and also just creating unnecessary demand into their frontline teams, which could be better pointed towards enriching that customer experience instead of dealing with frustrated customers who feel like, you know, brands have maybe tried to pull the wool over their eyes and pull a fast one on them.
So Victoria, can I ask you, what do you think is the reason for that then? So I worked in an organization whereby the retentions function was as big as the customer service function. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem is everyone's trying to be successful for themselves. So it was all about different cost centers and rather than a joined up business that doesn't work in silos. I mean, that was that particular organization. You've worked for some big organizations. How have you felt that the, you know, customer experience, customer service function has worked with other parts of the organization? Is it worked in silos? Is that the problem, or have you seen other problems?
Yeah, I mean, I guess through my career, I've worked across different industry sectors, different organizations and big market leading brands like John Lewis, HSBC, O2. And I've really, I guess, been fortunate to be able to lift the lid on different organisations and see that good, the bad and the ugly of both customer and people experience. I too have experienced those organisations and those ways of working where you have sales and retention teams almost working in complete isolation to what's happening in your customer teams. And it feels like everyone's almost got their blinkers on and they're focused just on their particular part of the journey. I'm very much of a simplistic mindset that it only works if it all works. So it's about looking at the customer experience through the customer lens, not your own functional lens and the part of the business that you work in. And customers, regardless of whether they're speaking about their experience in the banking sector, insurance sector, retail sector, they want to know that their custom and their loyalty to a brand is A, recognised and B, valued. So that sense of having to pretend that you want to cancel because you want a better deal, or having to go and join a business as a new customer because you're getting a better deal, you know, I think just doesn't really wash with customers. So in terms of organizations that do it well, it's those organizations that have that collective goal and that collective understanding of what success means from a customer perspective at the top of the organization. And that's consistently filtered and cascaded down. Conversely, the organisations that have perhaps been more challenged in that area, yes, it's absolutely to your point. It's people working within their functional silos, dealing with functional measures of success as opposed to the bigger picture. So it's really interesting to see how different businesses approach it.
Going back to your first point, the only way to truly measure if you get it right is to look at the complete customer journey from the customer's view, rather than what a lot of organizations do is measure from the inside out, and they never get that holistic joined up view.
Absolutely. I think it's funny, you know, I've worked in businesses where there's big emphasis on your Monday trading, you know, what weekly sales volumes, etc., new account setup, but there's never the flip side of the equation, which is how many customers have we actually lost? So what is the net effect? And that to me just seems like such a basic way of looking at it, because otherwise it's just a leaking bucket and you're running fast to kind of stand still. So for me, it's absolutely critical that you have that view and that insight into both sides of the equation to really understand where you're at as a business and what it's really like to be a customer of an organization.
Victoria, thank you. Again, lots of really good stuff to think about there. On that note, we've had lots of debate and feels like we probably need to give our listeners an opportunity to take stock and reflect on what's been said this morning. So we're going to wrap up part one of our podcast now. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions so far.